Henry Tandy was a good soldier, a Brit who served with great distinction during the First World War. During his 4 years of service, he was wounded twice, but always chose to return to duty. And he received numerous awards for courage under fire, including the highest award for gallantry that Britain has to offer, the Victoria Cross, roughly equivalent to the U.S. Congressional Medal of Honor. In fact, Henry Tandy is often described as the most decorated British enlisted man who survived the Great War. During one fateful day on the Western Front in 1918, Tandy had in the sight of his rifle a German soldier. But he could see that the man was wounded. They made eye contact, and Tandy lowered his rifle. The German nodded in gratitude and crawled away to safety. Later in life, Tandy told some newspaper reporters that he was merely following one of his standing rules of conduct: never shoot an enemy soldier who was wounded and out of the fight. That German soldier later saw in a newspaper a picture of Tandy receiving the Victoria Cross and recognized the man who had speared him. He cut out that picture and kept it for the rest of his life. In the 1930s, an Italian artist painted a picture of Tandy carrying some wounded comrade to safety. And that German soldier, now a much older man, heard about it and managed to obtain a copy of the painting and hung it in his office. In 1938, British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain met with the German Chancellor near Munich to try to head off war. And he noticed a picture hanging in the Chancellor's office and asked him about it. The Chancellor is reported to have said, "That man came so near to killing me that I thought I should never see Germany again. Providence saved me." Well, by now you may have guessed that that young German soldier Tandy spared was none other than Adolf Hitler. Hitler asked Chamberlain to pass on his gratitude, and according to Tandy's family, Chamberlain did just that, calling Tandy on his return home from Munich. Well, Henry Tandy didn't think much about that call until World War II began. He tried to re-enlist, but his age and wounds prevented that. So instead, he volunteered as a rescue worker during the Blitz, working in Coventry, a town that was very heavily bombed by Hitler's Air Force. After that, Tandy was quoted as saying, "If only I had known what he would turn out to be. When I saw all the people, women and children he had killed and wounded, I was sorry to God I let him go." Henry Tandy's choice to act with compassion and humanity on the battlefield that day likely changed the course of human history. Who knows how things might have turned out only if he'd pulled the trigger on that fateful day. Perhaps the world might have been spared the Holocaust. Or it could be that Germany might have won World War II without the hot-headed Adolf Hitler at the helm. What if? We'll never really know. Maybe none of us will ever have to make a choice that will change the course of human history for better or for worse. But every day we do make choices that change lives, our own and others, for better or for worse. I don't know about you, but I have a tendency to play the what-if game. What if I'd taken that other job? What if I'd gone to that other college? What if I hadn't gone to the bar that night when I met my husband, Blake? You know, I think we all do that to some extent. And it's not that we're dissatisfied with the choices we've made that led us to where we are, but it all just seems so contingent. A different choice here, a different turn there, and God only knows where we'd be or who we'd be today. Most of the time in our real lives, there's just no way of knowing how things might have turned out. But that's not true of fiction, is it? A fiction writer is free to explore what might have been. And what might have been is the theme of this week's Bible on Broadway selection, If Then, a play that's about two very different paths taken by one person based on the choices that she makes along the way. But before we get into it, I have to make a confession. I may have to turn in my gay card for this, but I'm just not very up on the latest Broadway musicals. In fact, I have to confess that I'd never even heard of this play before a few weeks ago. But when Reverend Karen asked me to preach today, I found a grainy YouTube video and watched it. And I'm so glad I did. The story is compelling. The music is great. The play won a number of awards, including an audience favorite new musical award. And with good reason, I think. So let me tell you a little bit of the story. The lead character, well, actually, both of the lead characters is Elizabeth, 38 years old and recently divorced. She's an urban planner who has just moved back to New York City for a fresh start. She meets her friends, Kate, a kindergarten teacher, and Lucas, a community organizer in Madison Square Park. Kate suggests that Elizabeth start using the name Liz and seek out new experiences. Lucas, on the other hand, suggests that she go back to her college nickname, Beth, and start making professional connections in the city. And the rest of the musical, somewhat confusingly, jumps back and forth between these two timelines, starring Liz and Beth as these possibilities unfold. Liz stays in the park with Kate, while Beth leaves with Lucas. So let's follow Liz for a while. There in the park, her phone rings, but she decides not to take the call. She and Kate stop to listen to a musician in the park when Liz is approached by Josh, a handsome army doctor just returning from his second tour of duty. She initially rebuffs his advances, but then she meets him again in the subway and several days later back in the park. And he admits that he's been hanging around the park hoping to see her again. Well, she finally agrees to date him because you never know.
Could go. I've got disaster written on my cheek. The odds are I'm some two-faced lying freak who will whisper pretty things, then leave you flat and steal your cat. It might not be that bad, but even so. You never see the worst that things can be. You'd think you do, 'cause you've been hurt before. Another hurt might hurt you that much more. And odds are I will do what most men do and hurt you too. 'Cause men are men and odds are odds. Although never know. You may think you know the end at the beginning, but the truth is there's no mortal way to tell. And the game's not over till the final inning, and I'm grinning 'cause this game might just end well. You
Meanwhile, in the other timeline, Beth has taken that call. It's from her old colleague, Stephen, who offers her a position in his department as the city's deputy urban planner. in charge of an important development project. She accepts, but this puts her at odds with community activist Lucas, who's been protesting the development, and he accuses her of selling out. But she convinces Lucas to drop his objections to the project by using her new connections to get his book published. Speaking of selling out. Well, Beth is attracted to her boss, Stephen, but he's married and rebuffs her advances. And so she spends the night with Lucas, who has a long-standing crush on her. She becomes pregnant, and without telling him, she has an abortion. And this poisons their relationship, and he doesn't talk to her for the next 2 years. Despite her success as an urban planner, she's not really happy, and she contemplates how her choices have left her single and alone. Liz, on the other hand, has taken a teaching position, and she's also had several dates with the Army Dr. Josh, where she contemplates spending the night with him, but she's not sure if it's the right thing to do. But she decides to take the risk, and here she goes.
I'm not one for fortunes or wishing on star, and studying all the stories and what our chances are. Then my heart starts beating faster, and it makes this disaster worse by far. Still, here I go. Oh, here I go. Now I know all the motions, the steps to and I count cards at the table. I never bet on chance. I leave nothing to the gods. I know all the odds, and even so, still here I go.
Some romantic, you know that's no surprise, and you're no good at small talk or little loving lies.
I'm awkward, ungrateful, and sometimes I'm hateful, as you know.
Still here we go.
Liz becomes pregnant and decides to marry Josh and have the baby. Josh is thrilled but overwhelmed to welcome his first son into the world. A year or so later, they have a second son, and Liz begs Josh to skip an offer of a third tour overseas, which he does. Several more years pass, and he receives another offer to return overseas, and this time he can't refuse. He ships out, but he's killed in action. A despondent Liz is devastated that she has to live without Josh. She relies on her friends to cope with her loss, but ultimately she comes to terms with life without him. She decides to leave her teaching position, and Stephen asks her to come to work for him on a major new development project in Midtown Manhattan, and she accepts. And thus ends the Liz timeline. Meanwhile, Beth is having some adventures of her own. She's on a business trip when her plane nearly crashes. And this experience shakes her to the core, and she realizes that life is short and she needs to reboot hers. She calls Lucas to reconcile their friendship. Stephen, now divorced, tells Beth that he regrets rejecting her advances years before and invites her to work for him in his new job in state government in Albany, but she turns him down, opting to remain in New York City and run for the city council. Finally, Beth meets Lucas and Kate in the park for coffee. And there she meets an army doctor named Josh, who has just returned from his third tour of duty. He approaches her, and she lets him buy her coffee. Is your head spinning? Well, I'm not surprised. It's hard enough to keep track of one life, much less two. These parallel stories of Beth and Liz illustrate how the choices that we make can impact us and those around us in unexpected ways. Most of the effects of our choices aren't life-changing or aren't world-changing, but they can be life-changing. One simple decision can have profound effects, certainly for oneself, often for the ones we love, and sometimes even for the world at large. Think about today's reading from Mark's Gospel. We see Jesus at the very beginning of his ministry. He's walking beside the Sea of Galilee, and he comes across some fishermen, Simon and his brother Andrew, and a bit farther on, James and John, the sons of Zebedee. And Jesus says to them, "Come, follow me. I will make you fish for people." And they leave their work and follow him. Immediately, Mark says. You know, I've always marveled at this story. Here are these four simple fishermen going about their business, mending their nets, making a living. They have lives, they have families, they have duties and responsibilities. And then this charismatic stranger comes along and they respond so positively and so immediately to him. If you think about it, it's mind-boggling. They're giving up all that they've ever known to follow this man, Jesus, and just because he invited them? They didn't ask about the compensation package, the stock options, the housing allowance, the vacation, the retirement plan. None of that. Their response is immediate and affirmative. Life-changing for them and world-changing for us, because these are key players in the Jesus story that forms the foundation of our faith tradition. On the one hand, it makes you wonder about the magnetism and appeal of this itinerant preacher, that these four men of rough peasant stock were drawn so immediately and irrevocably to him. "Follow me," he says, and they do. And on the other hand, you have to wonder why Jesus chose these four. I doubt if there was anything outwardly remarkable about them. No indication that these four would form the core of Jesus' band of followers. Nothing to suggest that they would do great deeds or sustain Jesus' ministry after he was gone. In fact, just the contrary. Throughout the Gospels, we see these same men continually blundering, failing to understand Jesus' teachings, and even denying him in his moment of most desperate need. No, it appears that the only thing remarkable about them was their response. "Yes, Lord, we will follow you. We're not sure where this path will lead, but we're willing to walk it with you." By choosing to accept his invitation that day on the seashore, they made faith history. You know, sometimes I put myself into this picture, fishing with my brothers, mending the nets, going about my business, and Jesus walks by and invites me to follow him. How would I respond? Would I drop my nets and leave my father there in the boat? Would my response be affirmative and immediate, or would I hesitate? I really don't know. I don't think any of us really do. It's another game of what if. But we can never know for sure, can we? Or maybe we can. Maybe we do know. Because it's not just the disciples at the Sea of Galilee that received Jesus' invitation. It's every one of us, every day. In 1,000 small ways, we're called every day to choose whether we'll follow Jesus. Because following Jesus really just means being Christian in the best sense of that word. The word Christian literally means little Christ. It began as a taunt against the early followers of the Jesus movement, but was later adopted by them as a pretty good description of the way they would like to live their lives. You know, the Gospels give us a blueprint, a model for the Christian life, insofar as they tell us how Jesus lived his life. Jesus is often saying, go and do likewise. Feed the hungry. Clothe the naked. Tend to the sick. Visit the imprisoned. Be welcoming. Be gentle. Be forgiving. Be generous. Be inclusive. It's not a command to be divine, but to be humane, to be human in the best sense of that word. And we make choices whether we'll follow Jesus every day simply by the way we live our lives. When we choose to live our lives with integrity, or we don't. When we choose to be whom God created us to be, or we don't. You know, in our actions every day, Jesus is calling us to choose hope and not despair, to choose justice, not injustice, to choose compassion, not selfishness, to choose faithfulness, not cynicism, to choose passion, not boredom, to choose the hard questions, not the easy answers, to choose curiosity, not ignorance, to choose fidelity, not selfishness, to choose life, not death. And I really doubt if any choices you'll ever make will change the world as dramatically as Henry Tandy's did, or the apostles did, or Rosa Parks did, or Martin Luther King did, or Troy Perry did. But they'll change your world, and that's enough. And no, you probably won't eradicate homelessness, but maybe you can help one homeless individual to have a decent meal or a warm bed for a night. No, you won't cure poverty, but maybe you can offer meaningful work to one poor person. No, you won't eliminate illiteracy, but maybe you can tutor one child struggling to learn. And no, you won't end loneliness, but you can visit one person in a hospital or nursing home. You can make a difference, but only if you choose to do so. But what if you make the wrong choices? Well, join the club. Who doesn't? We all make bad choices sometime. But you know what? If you've been around here for a while, you've probably heard someone say that there's nothing you've ever done and nothing you ever can do that will keep God from loving you. You're forgiven. You can begin again. You can always start over. And I think that's a pretty comforting thought, if you think about it. Even if you go wrong, even if you choose badly, you can always try again. You know, in the play, Liz says something like that as well.
that made me me. All of the accidents yet to be. All that's ahead and all that's behind. It's all in the moment I make up my mind and open my heart and start.
Did you catch that? All that's happened is happening now. All that might happen is here somehow. All the choices that made me me, all the accidents yet to be, all that's ahead and all that's behind, it's all in the moment I make up my mind. Maybe it's another way of saying, your choices matter. So choose faithfully. Choose for yourself and choose for those who share this journey with you, because your choices affect them as well. Choose so that you and your community can have life and have it more abundantly. And maybe you won't ever need to ask, what if? Amen.